Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Let the boys play. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, a podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Back in the rugby dungeon, JB currently reclined like he's Kate Winslet in Titanic.
Timely reference.
Hate me like one of your French girls.
Hang on. You just said let the boys pod. Let the boys play, sorry. Since when did Matt Cotton get editorial control over our podcast? It's usually us giving them editorial content for their podcast.
Well, can I just compliment, actually, listener of the pod? Like many rugby luminaries are, and honestly, through the World Cup, it's encouraging how many people involved in rugby are regular listeners to the podcast.
That is very encouraging. A small but influential fan base.
Yes, and Matt Cotton, writer of The Times, is one of them. I would compliment his weekly article previewing the Premiership fixtures.
Done with some mirth.
Yeah, mirth, yeah, is like a good it. Word. It's a good word. Joviality. I like it. It's very good. And yeah, he said he liked it when we said let the boys end at the end of the podcast.
I didn't like it, for the record.
It was an accident, but I think we should stick with it. And he also got in touch on email, like many people have done. Hello, Phil, by the way. Sorry.
Hello, Tim.
Contact edchasers@gmail.com is how you can get in touch with us. A bunch of brilliant emails this week, which I'll pepper through the podcast. One of them... Matt Cotton himself got in touch to say that you were talking. What did you call Sail Sharks Ground last week?
The Temple of Fun.
Temple of Fun.
Yeah, Temple of Fun.
He said that in one of his great articles for the Times, he has referred to it as Beatdown Boulevard.
I quite like that.
Yeah, which is good.
So, I guess that's another thing to check in on the email. Any great name or any unofficial names for stadiums that you have?
Just on Beatdown Boulevard and people that got Beatdown Boulevard to that place. Do you know Steve Diamond's got a new job?
Really? Tell me more.
He's got a new job alongside... how alongside it is, I don't know. But Nick... What's his name? From Coventry. You know the guy, the CEO of Coventry? Nick... I want to say Nick
whoever that is.
Yeah, he's a really interesting bloke. He spoke quite frequently about the Wasp situation in the Championship. And there's someone else who's involved in the Championship who's a bit of a heavy hitter too. And those three... are involved with forming Prem 2, which is the Championship. Now, I do not give much praise out often to the RFU, but that's not a bad combination of people. I mean, those are the sort of people I want thinking about the game.
So is that a formal announcement?
Well, it was on LinkedIn.
Really?
Yeah, so Steve Diamond announced it on LinkedIn. He texted him and was like, that's amazing. What are you doing?
You are in deep on LinkedIn at the moment.
I tell you, it's good for rugby. It is good for rugby. And I'll tell you something else about LinkedIn later on.
Of course.
Yeah, it's a great tease, that.
Yeah, it's good. Can I start the podcast with a very, very traumatic story?
Yes, please.
Is it another harrowing, narrow defeat?
It is another harrowing, narrow defeat. Very harrowing, very narrow. Unjust, probably one of the few types of this defeat in modern history, but Aylesbury went down to Marlow.
Yeah.
Aylesbury went down to Marlow, basically last play of the game.
Almost nobody on planet Earth is happy with that result. For the man sat opposite us. Tim Cocker.
Tim and maybe another person most of Marlow team aren't happy with that.
A few of Sauron's minions. and Tim Cocker.
Some Nazis on the run in Argentina. They're celebrating, sure.
And long-time listeners of the podcast will know that the whole Tim is a Marlowe fan. It's kind
huge,
of...
huge Marlowe fan.
Kind of a joke. But yeah, we got contacted on email with just a photograph of the scoreboard that read Aylesbury 28, Marlowe 34.
Devastating.
End of days. It is the end of days.
Hi to Sean Caskey for that picture. Contact headchasers@gmail.com. It's incredible, right? So Aylesbury have, in their league, have won only two games this season, and yet they have 19 points.
Yeah.
That's how many losing bonus points and try bonus points they've scored.
They're brilliant losers. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Just to add to that, we're going to be peppering this podcast with a lot of mentions of local rivalries, because loads of people have got in touch with us about local rivalries. It's a hot topic.
Yeah, well, we wanted to know what the big derbies are, and actually there's one from the weekend, and let me sort of kick off the rugby from the weekend chat with maybe the most intense rivalry that was played out this weekend between, I'm just looking for the email, Stuart Norman, the subject of this. Oh no, that's I'll save that one for later, actually, because that's a really good one. But Avon played against Oldfield Old Boys this weekend, a real tight Bath rivalry in the lower leagues. Well, sorry, I lived in Oldfield Park, so actually the way you say it when you live down there is not Oldfield, it's Oldfield Old Boys.
Oh nice, very good. God, that brings up memories, that accent.
Yeah. So, oh, when you were in Bristol.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, mate. It's like people chuck L's on the end of words. It's like, I'm going down Alstall's, mate. Do you want anything?
They do as well. Yes, that is very true.
Well, where is it? Local rivalry. Oh, man.
Do you know what I said before the podcast? Get all the local rivalry emails ready.
I've got it written down, I think. Oh, this is really unprofessional.
This is phenomenal. This is phenomenal. Well, I know. Shall we kick off with one of the sport's biggest local rivalries?
Go on.
Whilst you're looking for it. Who watched Bath versus Gloucester this weekend?
Yes. Mm. Friday Night Lights.
What did you think?
I thought it was... So, looking at the team sheets, I was expecting Bath to win quite comfortably.
Were you really?
Yeah.
Tell me more.
I was.
Because JB looked at the Bath pack and said they're not big enough.
Second row.
You looked at the second row matchup and you fancied Gloucester.
I did.
Yeah.
And although, I will say that my predictions at the end of the day were all away wins.
And you were one short.
I was one short. So, yeah. Yeah, I thought that the Bath...
How could you predict simultaneously Gloucester were going to win and all away wins?
Because I then reversed my Gloucester thoughts. Because, you know, Gloucester also don't have a massive second row.
No, they don't.
So, and that's something which we need to talk about in a second, actually, because it's going to be an overall theme for the Premiership. But yeah, I actually thought that they matched up quite nicely. And I just thought Gloucester would be the better all-round team, as in like a unit. And that's why I thought they... could cause Bath some trouble.
And so Bath have clearly stepped on. They've moved on a step. Gloucester feel like they've stepped back.
It does. And there's a few youngsters and a few cogs missing in probably key positions. Like the 9-10 combo of Gloucester versus the 9-10 combo of Bath.
Yeah.
In Varney and Barton versus Spencer and Finn Russell.
That's a big difference, isn't it?
Massively.
Big difference. Yeah. And I thought the packs probably... I thought front row probably slightly in Bath's favour. Second row, you're right, probably maybe slightly in Gloucester's favour. Back row, relatively even. Mm. Not much to pick. Half-backs in...
Massive.
Massively in Bath's favour.
But Barton was going well.
Yeah, was playing really nicely. He's not Finn Russell, though, is he?
No, that is absolutely true.
And can we just say, right...
His bank balance will back that up.
One of my favourite pictures, I love when players lean into the rivalry and embrace the rivalry, and there's been some great moments there. But there was a friend of the pod, Carl Ferns, the photo of him just running over and arms in the air right in front of the shed after the Bath win. It's just a great picture.
They do hate him in the shed.
They absolutely hate him. But Finn Russell shushing the shed was... He's only very early in his Bath career. That was an iconic moment.
Yeah, it was. Do you know when I thought this game was over? I thought the turning point of this game was Santiago Carrera's tackle on Joe Cockenasinga.
I thought you were going to say a Will Muir. Will Muir just ran over.
Failure.
It was the Cockenasinga tackle, which was the big one. So there's a little crossfield kick to Cockenasinga. Cockenasinga gets it clean, and then Carreras, as he's been doing all day, has been putting his body on the line, and I think that hit was just one too many, and it was that hit which really put him off for the Muir hit, because he got absolutely wiped out, and then when it happened again, he's like, I just can't do this anymore, I am done.
Yeah, he did get skittled by Will Muir.
Yeah,
who's probably, he is a big strong boy, he's probably not quite as big as Cocknessinger.
No, but he's more powerful in a way, like awkward, and
it's the awkwardness.
Yeah.
Do you think so? Gloucester already, we're what's five? Is it five? Round five, that was.
Yeah.
Round five. So we're halfway through. We're a quarter of the way through the season. The regular season.
It's 18 games this season. Yeah.
And would you make any decision on either of these teams right now? Yes, they are going to be in the playoff hunt, or no, they're not.
No, I wouldn't. Is the answer. Now, go on, Phil.
I would probably say. Neither of them are going to be in the playoff hunt, would be my instinct. I think Bath have got more chance, but I think there's other teams who are better that we'll probably come on to in a short while.
So I think the secret to understanding the Premiership this year is there are no good teams, and there's one bad team. So
it's relative, though, because...
No, it's not relative on Newcastle. They are legit.
Oh,
bad.
Yeah, sorry.
Legit
the
bad.
Newcastle are bad. There's no disagreement there.
Yeah.
The good is relative. If you put them against, say, Toulouse or La Rochelle or Leinster...
Yes.
None of these teams are particularly good. In the league, though, there are then shades, and I think Quins are a good team. I think Sale are a good team. I think Northampton, although when it gets a bit wetter, perhaps not.
Phil, you're going to list the whole league.
Because I think there's about four or five teams who are going to be keeping.
Tigers.
Tigers, maybe, but Tigers are second bottom at the moment.
Yeah. Bristol Bears could come alive.
No.
Do you think?
Well, here's the thing. No. Gloucester,
no, no.
Yeah, I'm with you there, Phil.
I think Bath, probably not.
So I think the way to understand the Premiership this year, and we're probably late to this because we're on game five and we should have done this in, say, game three.
No one cared about the Premiership in game three because the Rugby World Cup was on.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. Yeah. So
more for the Premiership for having their games. Yeah. They could have had them during the Six Nations instead of during the World Cup, but they chose not to.
So we're just playing catch-up here, right? Mm. But the secret to understanding the Premiership this year is understanding what each team does and how that match-up is relative to their opposition. Because this year, more than any other, is what do you leave out of your team when you're building it? So it's a little bit like this last year, but this year is really that case. So you can do some things, but you don't have the budget to do all things. Like, Exeter have absolutely crucified two of the best teams in the league, particularly Sale. There was no excuse for what happened to Sale from Sale.
Yeah, even with a weakened team, still no excuse.
Because
they got panned 40-0, wasn't it?
Smashed. But then they got smashed themselves today by Northampton. So you've got to look at each team. It's so hard to understand the Premiership this year because you've got to understand where the teams are strong and how that plays out against their opposition.
I will also take it back a step and say, I think, and I don't want to be negative because I think two things can be true at once. One, you can have a very competitive league which throws up some really entertaining games, which we saw this weekend. Secondly, you can say the standard is not great.
No, it's not. So here's my thoughts on building a Premiership team at the moment. Okay, I think we have to give up on the idea that you can build a La Rochelle in the Premiership. Not going to happen. Just not a thing you can do. Or a Toulouse, or a Leinster. Those all-round great teams aren't going to happen because the rare trait that you need in rugby is size. And anyone of any size within these teams is going to go to France, right? They just are. Like Dave Ribbons or Kieran Brooks is in France at the moment. Like anyone with any size. So you're going to get these smaller packs. I think that Northampton probably have the right idea, as do Harlequins at the moment, which is you just get the most skillful lads. And as such, it's a very attractive product, but it's not going to last any length of time at all when it comes to Europe. They are going to get absolutely creamed. But I think that's the way it's going to go. You're going to be looking at average body size kind of lads because the rare, huge talent will have gone elsewhere, except for a handful of England boys.
Yeah, because there are a couple of teams who are probably three teams who are really trying to gather the size of players in Exeter, who've been doing it for years, Leicester, and Sale.
Yeah,
I know that's obviously this is professional rugby. Everyone wants size,
but
those teams do prioritise, it seems like, from the outside looking in, that they prioritise size, certainly in key positions.
And interestingly, when you look ahead to European matchups, don't you sort of think, like, Sale will handle themselves better against many teams than most Premiership sides, for example?
Yeah, Sale are the most adept, I think, for European competition. Saracens
will be,
because they've got the experience.
Yeah.
More than anything else.
And very talented players.
Yeah, both those things are true. And not Exeter. I mean, and the other thing is with the age profile of these lads, you're going to have to take a massive punt. So Exeter have done a great job of finding big lads, big physical lads, at the right price. So you can guarantee when those contracts are up, they're off to France. Unless they're English qualified and they've got a shout with the England team, they're gone. And this is going to repeat itself over and over again. I think the easier way to build a team at the moment is a Northampton or a Harlequins, where you get young lads who are very, very talented, but that talent, like, it's like A-grade talent, but not A-plus talent.
Yeah, you upskill them to the limit, to the handling and cohesion side of things, but you can't make them any bigger.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right.
Yeah, I definitely think there's something in that. This Exeter team, even though they did get hammered, they got nothing out of their game today, and we were probably thinking they'd have a good shot of winning this. Exeter do excite me, not for this year, because I think they're just too young, but they've brought a lot of talent through and picked up some interesting and unusual players, and it's giving Baxter 2-3 years. It's almost like when he kind of went back to 2012-13, when he was just building into a Premiership team. He's almost back at that stage, and he's got to rebuild from the grounds up, because, I mean, other than Henry Slade...
Who's his name?
Well, this starting lineup is... Slade's been there for 10 years. Vermaelen's been there for a couple of years.
The entire rest of the back line, though.
Yeah, the entire rest of the back... The team...
I suppose you could say Hawkins is a Welsh international, but yeah.
Yeah, but he's only been there 12 months.
Yeah, quite.
They're all brand new. So,
yeah, it's a hell of an ask. But they seem to have got the right personnel. And they seem to be playing in quite a nice... Well, except for today. But
yeah.
They seem to know what they're doing. They seem to have a clear identity, as Exeter do.
Yes.
Now, I think the other advantage... So, I'm going to look at the Premiership in a more positive light this week. It doesn't change the numbers. It doesn't change the eventual downfall in 3 years' time when it all collapses. But the positive light will be... I still do believe that the standard of coaching in the Premiership is
good.
Sky high. Mm-hmm. Absolutely sky high. And I think Exeter probably proved that. But then, you know, did you not... Some of these games this weekend, Leicester, Harlequins would be one, and to a certain degree, so was Bath, Gloucester. I thought the skill levels and the coaching levels were sky high. Mm-hmm. Like, some of the things that these teams did were really, really good. What you don't get in the Premiership is you're not going to get that international intensity which we saw.
Yeah,
in the
and
Cup.
That's the little ingredient that I think I'm not dissatisfied, because I enjoyed it, but
it's white sugar.
It was kind of like I can sort of watch a game, and ordinarily when you've got two teams at whatever level, you can identify, you know, oh, this is a great matchup, this is an entertaining game. But you can identify also when it is not quite top-notch intensity.
Yeah.
And I maybe it's different. I've been, you know, I spent the last 8 years sitting on the sidelines watching, and I'm sort of got a different, I'm like you two with the Premiership now. So I have to be careful of my biases. Is that clouding my judgment? I don't think it is, though. I'm not enjoying it as much, because the gap between this standard and where it's been is a massive step down.
You've just been...
Yeah, you're right.
You've been sat in the stands.
Yeah, you're right.
In the Rugby World Cup, witnessing genuinely some of the best games of all time.
Yeah, you're right.
Like some of those knockout games, and even some of the pool games, are some of the all time classics that we will look back on.
Yeah.
So it's like
I'm hungover from that.
Yeah, it's like you've been like binging on fentanyl for 2 months, and then someone just offered you an aspirin, and you're like, "Oh, this isn't really hitting the spot now."
I think you're right, mate. I think that's probably it, to be honest. But what's dovetailing that when you think about the World Cup, quite often people always talk, oh, the World Cup, this is gonna get more interest, get more people into the sport, get more people into the game. The attendances are down A big chunk.
Yeah, it didn't surprise me one bit. There was no joined up thinking, no joined up strategy, no cross promotion. There was nothing. Now, it was amazing how little they cared on comms about where the players played. I mean, I want to know that stuff, but they just didn't really mention it. It used to be like the Quinns man or the man from Northampton or, you know, X amount of caps for Leicester. That was a big deal. Like the Leicester front row, that was a big deal. Yeah,
but
no one cares.
Yeah, that's fine. But that would explain that why there wasn't an increase, but it doesn't explain why there's a tangible drop. It was in the rugby paper today because if they hadn't cross-promoted it, you could go, oh, look, all these people have this interest in rugby and they could have been captured and they haven't been sent going. But actually, the drop is the bit that concerns me.
I suspect if you actually know who the people are and you could categorise them, you'd see an inflow of new eyes, only small, but an inflow of new eyes who'd watch the World Cup. It wouldn't be a huge inflow, but something. And then you'd see people leaving who are disheartened, who are hardcore Premiership fans.
Or who were...
Yeah, hardcore. Who were hardcore Premiership fans.
I guess if you were a Premiership season ticket holder at one club last year and you and three teams went bust, you might just go... if you were at a club... No, what I'm saying is three of your home fixtures were...
And didn't happen. Sale had one home game in between end of January and April.
Yeah. Well, Sale aren't really in a terrible situation. But imagine you're an Exeter fan, right? All you've seen... all last year, your favourite players leave. So it's a hell of an ask to go and just support the jersey. I know that's what fans should do. But you actually end up wanting, if you watch a team for a prolonged period of time, supporting the players. And all they've seen is players leaving. They have no idea if, like, Ethan Roots is any good, Ross Vincent is any good, what's their relationship with, like, Tom Kearns or, you know...
But they've seen Jack Knoll, Luke Cowan-Dickie.
Exactly.
Come up from boys.
Yeah, yeah, Sam Simmons and Joe Simmons.
Yeah.
Johnny Hill, I mean, that was last year. But, you know, you start compounding all these lads that win something, and you think, Christ, as a fan, I'm going to have to watch this entire rebuild. And I just don't think the Premiership brand is strong enough for that. Even the Chiefs.
So I think there's another thing in the Premiership that we saw a little bit this week, and we definitely saw it last week, in that because the squads are thinner, and talent has left the league, which means it's been replaced by younger guys generally, and certainly less experienced guys. Teams are going to prioritise their home matches, so they're going to send weaker squads away. And we saw it this week with Saracens and Exeter, I think, this week. We definitely saw it last week with Bath going to Northampton and giving Finn Russell a week off, as an example, with Tigers going to Saracens, what would traditionally be a big top of the table clash, and Tigers not bringing their internationals, but Saracens fielding their internationals. Any team, Newcastle going away, or any team going to Newcastle are going to have a weakened side. So I think you'll see a bit more of that, which is going to create some mismatches. The two, the three notable exceptions this week, Sale took a strong... perhaps not their strongest team, but a strong enough team to Bristol. Bath in the West Country Derby did field a strong team. And Quinns fielded a strong, very strong team and got the spoils against Tigers.
That was a good matchup.
It was.
And in the sort of looking ahead to Six Nations squads and things like that, there'll be a lot of people after the weekend going, oh, Finn Smith, got to get Finn Smith in. Finn Smith will have his day, and it'll be in the future. Will Collier is someone like genuinely think you can't scrum, you can't win at international rugby.
100%.
He's just a big lump. So in a way, don't care what he does around the park. He's not that, but he's pretty. He's
Will
decent,
Collier
actually,
came
but
up
just
in.
Pick him, get him in.
He came up in conversation the other day, and the point about him was if he's South African, he'd have a handful of caps.
Yes.
They love their scrummaging.
Just big men.
And I think, yeah. Mind you, the Quinns scrum didn't go all that well against Leicester.
It didn't have it all its own way.
It had Marler and...
Marler and Collier starting.
And they weren't as good as I was hoping for. I mean, they still won the game.
Yeah, against Cole and Van Vyck.
Yes.
With Cronin coming off the bench.
Yeah.
So, tell you what, watching Dan Cole run is painful. It is so painful. In fact, watching, tell you another guy who caught my eye this week for his athletic prowess or lack of. Alfie Barbary seems very out of shape to me.
He came off. Did he come off this week?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. With about 20 minutes to go, he came off with a knee.
Yeah,
I think issue.
So there was a pretty someone tackled him the ball.
Absolutely smashed. That's the game, isn't it?
He's had repeat knee injuries.
But he didn't look good on the fit. He looked sluggish to me.
Yeah,
and this really worries me. Not because, well, yes, actually, when a player has had a lot of time out, you expect them to come back in peak condition. And the thing which ruins your conditioning is the game of rugby. So by the time you get to the end of the season, you are not in good shape.
Well, I'm going to go. I was going to bring up Alfie Barbary as well in a different context. I was going to say we've just seen a World Cup final where Dion Fahey played 78 and a half minutes.
Yeah.
Alfie Barbary used to be a hooker.
And also a centre.
That would be useful.
I know it seems to almost have become just single-minded thinking. He is a back row. But I was watching him thinking Dion Fahey and thinking, well, he was a hooker. You can actually get him in, particularly in that position.
Well, I'll give you another South African comparison. And this is great praise to Bath. But Sam Underhill, we've not seen him for so long. Do you know who he reminds me of?
Quagga Smith.
The English Quagga Smith. The administrator of violence on a field. Christ, he's violent.
Well, and I came away from the third, fourth place playoff game thinking, if Sam Underhill had been on the bench for England, as we said on the pod, and not Billy Vunipola, England would have been in a World Cup final.
I think there is...
Talk about fighting fire with fire.
Mm. Yeah, Underhill, he looks like he's playing really well at the moment. I mean, how long will that be because of his injury record? But
imagine
to that point about Billy, I think you could have had... You could name about 10 Premiership players. Yeah. But Billy had probably his worst ever game in an England shirt for the 15 minutes that he was on the pitch.
For his last, possibly his last ever England
game. Probably his last
Will
ever
be
England
his
game.
His worst ever England game.
Yeah.
That's kind of the way it should go, isn't it?
Yeah, don't just retire.
Most people don't go, I've just won everything, I'm going to retire.
Well, Aaron Smith nearly did it.
I'm really
annoyed with that. Like, if you've just won the World Cup, you carry on. You do not stop.
And like Courtney Laws' last game, because he didn't play in the third place.
No, he didn't. He was huge in the semi. Yeah, I want Courtney Laws to carry on until he has an absolute shocker.
Never gets picked again. It is nice, like, so few players get to go out when they want, because like Courtney Laws has gone out on his term.
I don't agree with it, but Billy
Vunipola is likely going out not on his terms, so there is something to be said for it.
I'll just quickly jump through a couple of emails because I found the one. It was from Ian Paris earlier. He was talking about local rivalries. This was after JB, his team, Didsbury Tok H, who got handily beaten by Eccles this weekend.
You did get badly beaten by Eccles.
But they dished it out against South Manchester rivals Broughton Park last weekend. So we just said, right, let us know if there's any big local rivalries going on where you are. Ian Paris got in touch and says, there's a spicy Bath derby this weekend, just the one just gone yesterday, where my club, Avon RFC, are playing, as I mentioned, Oadfield Oad Boys in the only Bath derby in our league. Counties 2 Somerset. Should be a cracker. And it was a cracker. And it was very, very tight as well. It was a 31-27 victory for Avon over Oadfield Oad Boys.
Oadfield.
Yes.
Well, congratulations to Avon.
And there is, in terms of, this is great, Stuart Norman has an email, contacthedchasers@gmail.com, saying the local derby to end all derbies. And this could be the benchmark for all future emails. He says, look no further. Wiverliscombe versus Wellington is a Boxing Day tradition with a rich history. Based 7 miles apart in rural West Somerset, this annual event boasts crowds into the thousands, with both towns looking forward to it every year for local bragging rights. To say the games of the 60s, 70s, 80s and 90s were tasty is an understatement. I invite you down to Wivy this year to experience a true local derby and, of course, plenty of cider and beer. The game is renowned across the southwest and is something that all local teams only wish they were part of. See the links below to the reference to the Wiverliscombe history and the Boxing Day derby. It's quite something.
Well, I'm going to have to say, it's not a derby, but I'm going to say hello to Ickingham Saints. I think that's how you say it. Sounds like they've had a bit of a tough time of it, lost their ground, so on and so forth. But they had, as I understand it.
I know someone that plays for them or is involved in that club. Is
please
the same person?
Tell me who it is.
I think, isn't Dougie from the Morlover podcast?
It is.
Yeah.
He is involved. I think it's their first win of the season, which is not a walkover.
Oh, good lads.
So well done, guys. Well done indeed.
The history of that Wiveliscombe versus Wellington game was a rugby match that took place between Wiveliscombe and Taunton School 150 years after they first played each other. There was an exhibition match. There was recently an exhibition match to mark 150 years. So that's the rivalry that goes back and it's played out on Boxing Day every day. A Boxing Day match is still a thing because you used to play on Boxing Day.
I will
you?
Play Boxing Day if there's a local game. So my club, Colwyn Bay, it fell onto hard times, to put it mildly. A lot of people left and they didn't do it. So they used to do like...
Once you end the tradition, it's done, isn't it?
Yeah. So we used to do various things. We used to do Wales versus the rest of the world. They were really good fun games. And then it sort of turned into touch 1 year and then it sort of died. But I think that might come back. The other club in my local area that does really good Boxing Day do is Llandudno. And Llandudno really goes to town on it. And every time you go down, I mean, every time I've been down to that, it's been dynamite. And they are the traditional local rivals to Colwyn Bay. But it's hard to say with rivalries. With the leagues, a rivalry can die out really quick. As soon as one team fades and the other team just forgets all about them, that rivalry can die out for like a decade. And that's basically what happened with Colwyn Bay, Llandudno.
Mm. Well, that's why we need to keep these local rivalries alive. So let us know if there's a spicy derby happening where you are. Contact deadchasers@gmail.com. I'm just quickly going to jump to an email from Jang as well, who's got in touch and says, he says, as below, perhaps we could use AI to build perfect teams and for them to play games of rugby like Tron. Let me just explain what's going on here. So he sent a link to a Substack article, which... I thought this was like sarcastic at first, but it's a genuine suggestion by Ed Warner, and it's a Substack article. It's quite well followed by the look of it, but this guy is suggesting that why would you put athletes through the suffering
of
sport?
Stop already!
When you for the benefit of people just watching for pure
entertainment.
But
that's not the benefit. That's not the benefit. Ed Warner, you're wrong.
Well, he's suggesting he said sports could not only survive but thrive.
No.
If they harness AI, marrying man and machine, while preserving the allure and frailty of the human condition.
It could take our enjoyment
to new levels and into new dimensions.
No, it can't.
Gives an example saying you could have a Rumble in the Jungle rematch billed as a live immersive experience of the 1974 Ali versus Foreman
not
fight
interested.
In Kinshasa.
Is AI basically simulating a fight?
Yeah.
Basically, that's what he's suggesting.
Just
I have.
So he's basically suggesting, and this is what...
I'm not saying this guy's a fan of anime porn, but I can see the... I can see where the constituency for this sport is coming from, right?
So now let me... oh, yeah, go on.
So here's why, right? What do you mean the frailty of the human condition? And what do you mean for the benefit of us? The real benefit of the sport is for the people that play it, and then we live vicariously through them. Right, our pathetic lives can only dream to be as good as their lives. It's so amazing what they do.
Well, that's kind of the point that Ed Warner's making. He's like, you can now achieve that. You can achieve that feeling for the spectators without putting,
no, you can't, because without the suffering,
through it.
Without the suffering and the backstory and knowing how that guy got there. Like, AI will never create the plucky underdog. And if it did create the plucky underdog, it won't be plucky underdog because you know how it's going
to
end.
It won't be long before, and this is a fact, genuinely, I know, I've spoken to people that are involved in this and it's genuinely incredible. There's enough audio of us, we're into our 11th season of doing podcasts.
Oh, no.
Where... We could automatically generate podcasts and we don't actually do the podcast.
This is a great idea. Does it have to be on rugby? Could we do like an F1 podcast? Could we have a range of podcasts?
Well, no, the point is now, maybe this is it. The Egg Chaser TMO shipping container is probably defunct because whenever one of us is on holiday, it's fine. We just turn on the AI fill and automatically generate his input.
Podcast.
But Jang's email says, gents, as below, perhaps we could use AI to build perfect teams and for them to play rugby like Tron. And so real contact or roughness or concussions would none of it would ensue at all.
Concussions!
Surely the ultimate ambition of the RFU.
Concussions!
So, yeah.
Concussions. Did anyone see this?
Yes.
Start of the week. So obviously a week is a long time and therefore we forget things. Concussions. This has sort of died down conveniently, has it not?
Oh, this is interesting. Some stories which come out and some research and some science really flies and takes off. Some gets kind of mentioned casually and then just like swept off,
so,
swept away. Inconvenient.
Are you aware of this story, Phil?
Yes.
Tell me if I've got this completely wrong. Tell me if I'm losing my mind here. But as I understood this story, right, it said that
research.
Story, people in Otago, players in Otago, are wearing gum shields to measure the impact that they receive from rugby.
The G forces,
right? Obviously, there is a problem with the professionals. Have we mentioned there's a problem with the professionals?
I don't know if anybody in rugby's mentioned it.
No one
else seems to mention it.
Well, it's very well established in some quarters that there's an issue with contact and particularly high contact and high concussive force in rugby. But I assume that if anything's been done about it, they've done it at the elite level.
You would assume, right? You would assume.
Surely, right? That's what rugby's done, isn't it?
That's exactly what...
They haven't just brought it in at the amateur level. Oh, anyway, carry on.
Yes, exactly right, Tim. Exactly right. So the two quotes that got me, and I'm pretty... I should have had this written down. But lower level amateur rugby, like the stuff that I play, the impacts are broadly in line with other recreational sport. I told you, I know, I play it. I fucking know. I told you, I've been telling you for years now, I know.
The people that play
roller coasters
the sport
are more dangerous.
Yeah.
I know. I don't go on roller coasters.
And this is it. The people that actually play the sport, when they spoke with that one voice, when the RFU clumsily put out their new protocol that they were going to do at the, what they've called the community level, which involves semi-professional, outstanding athletes in the National Division 1 and below. When they had the community game, the whole voice of the community game spoke, well, I won't say exclusively spoke with one voice, but the majority of people at the community game said no.
Right.
Because they play the game and they know it. And we know there is what we see on the TV and what you play when... So, Digby Talk H played Eccles.
So do you know when they say to you, trust the experts, right? And then you're treated like a conspiracy theorist because you don't trust the experts. This is why we don't trust them. So the doctor, the chief RFU doctor, who has been paraded round saying, oh, look at the site, he should be struck off. I'm deadly serious. Like, he just used his authority and his credentials in order to change the game. And it clearly... he obviously doesn't know what he's talking about. He's obviously incompetent. What is that guy's name? He needs to be struck off. I mean, anyone who uses their credentials just to enforce something which they don't know about, I think it's remarkable.
The consequences of this are that there are schools that don't play rugby now. There are parents who don't want their kids to play rugby now. The perception that has been made almost like truth... the perception is that it is significantly more dangerous than it turns out, according to this piece of data, and let's wait for more to confirm.
So they did these law changes, right? And I'm pretty sure it's something like they did these law changes in anticipation of the release of the data, which is crazy. So when we're looking at the... like, we spoke about a bit of research last week, didn't we, about what people are watching, what they're not watching at younger ages, and rugby has fallen out of the top 20. One of the reasons is the marketing is like, yeah, watch this, but you will die. You know, play it, but you will have a severe concussion. And the pros are getting sick of it too, because the pros have been told constantly, like, you're just going to die. Like, there is no light at the end of the tunnel. You're going to have concussion. You won't remember your kids, and then you'll die. And it's just not true. It's not true. It is a purely politically motivated thing. It's ran basically by people like Alison Pollock, who are seriously worried that their son Hamish was not man enough to play rugby and therefore goes on a crusade. And that is exactly what happened. Well, he got hurt. Unlucky, it happens.
We've got the truth on our side on this particular point.
That is the truth. That is 100%
the truth. So we don't need to characterise it like that.
He got injured.
Yeah, yeah, no, but no.
No, let's 100% get the truth. Her whole campaign is predicated on Hamish getting injured. And after that, she went round and said to all the other parents, would you like your sons to get injured?
What you just said is you're worried her son's not man enough to play rugby. You don't need to put it in that terms.
Okay, she did not allow him the space to become man enough to develop to play rugby. Right, that is who's I mean, it's absolutely outrageous.
She's allowed to.
She parades around, and she's allowed to. Why is she not struck off? No, she's allowed to.
But it's the job.
Not as a doctor, she's not.
Well, she's allowed to give an opinion, but yeah.
Not as a doctor, up there and says, I'm a public health official, I'm a public health doctor, okay, we should ban this. Here is the UN Convention for the Abuse of Children. She should be struck off.
Okay.
And so should the doctor who advised the RFU immediately.
What they would say is this one study doesn't disprove what we were saying, it's just a study.
And what I would say is, particularly the guy with the RFU, your job is to look after rugby players.
Right, yeah, so that's what I was going to say. They would just say, like, people will present arguments as they should, and they will have a perspective. You've got a perspective, I've got a perspective, and we will quite often find evidence that
they're not equal perspectives, that's really important.
But we people generally, we all do find the evidence that backs up what we think, and there's very few people that are able to completely impartially make an assessment based on facts. But when you're running a sport, that is your job.
You kind of have to.
That is your job.
Hang on, is that your job?
Well, I'm not saying that's your job, but before you make a decision on a given topic, you have to.
Yeah,
you have to be.
Can I be very clear here? Right, the people in charge of this were not bothered about running our sport, and you know this by the event of T1. You know this by their pathological desire to just expand the player base without any regard to the actual game itself, the way they don't celebrate the actual true values of the game, not the values that they make up, not the managerial type values, the actual values that we care about. You look at all these things combined, and actually the reason they wanted to ban the high shot had nothing to do with the science, and they knew it.
Well, no,
it
was all through politics. The high shot's always been banned. It's always...
Sorry, the higher tackles. To lower it was purely a perception thing, as is T1. The whole thing is linked. The whole thing is linked, and it sucks.
Well, that new game of touch, T1, is actually just so they own the sport.
Yeah, so they can expand their player base.
Yeah.
It's...
So, just an example on this. I was chatting to a Welsh chap last night. I was at a dinner last night. Guy I'd never spoke to before. And we were talking about rugby. And he said, when I was younger, kind of my dream was to be a professional rugby, a high-level rugby player. Never made it. But my dream for my son would be for him to be like a good rugby player. But now, given everything that's going on in the game, I'm not sure I'd want him to go into that. And I was like, that's just... So he's a guy who, he watched the World Cup, he doesn't follow a club team, and his perception of the sport is, and he said, head injuries. So
it's incredible, isn't it?
He's someone who has been... like our own sports publication of itself has just been this like this negative tirade for the last however many years.
And we even the World Cup made, I know what they were trying to do was make the spectacle better, but actually when you think about it from a PR point of view, what the bunker did was make a whole layer, a whole story, a whole element of the sport and a whole load of the narrative and the talking points around specifically head contact.
Yeah.
Yes, that's a good point, that, Tim.
Yeah.
It's like from a PR perspective, it's an absolute shambles.
Everyone involved with the high tackle framework and everything else. Not high tackle framework. That's the wrong one. That's actually quite good.
Bringing it in at the amateur level in the way that they did.
Yeah, and the constant talking about it, and just giving these people too much power. The way they parade round the experts. Look at progressive rugby. What a bunch of grifters they are.
Well, now we know that most sports for the amateur level, most sports are as dangerous as rugby. They need to start progressive horse riding, progressive
snooker.
Tennis, progressive theme parks.
Yeah, progressive roller coasters.
Yeah.
But can you imagine what a terrible life we'd all live if these idiots... I mean, they're not serious, are they? The reason they hate rugby is because it's predominantly played by men and aggressive men, and it celebrates masculinity. That's why they hate it. It has nothing to do with head contact. And if you spend... even, you know, if you ever see Alison Pollock on the ropes in an interview, if you ever see it, I've seen it a few times, she abandons all of the science because she doesn't know anything about the science. In fact, she knows her science is a fraud. And she is a fraud. No, she knows it, Tim. Let me finish. Before you came in all high-minded...
We don't need to talk about her.
No,
you've given her so much airtime.
No, you absolutely do.
All you need to do is focus on the facts that we now have.
No, because we need to know who the grifters are. Because we don't have that platform. Well, but the people need to know who these clowns are.
You've got a podcast where you could just say, give people the ammunition to answer these people.
But Phil's person, right, who... was talking about his son, doesn't probably listen to our podcast, but he probably will get his information from the BBC. So when Alison Pollock comes on there, it's important that all of our listeners know exactly what a grifter that she really is.
You're listening to the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast. We have just paused our transmission. we've just deleted a little bit of what just happened then, and we're going back and just retracing our steps a little bit. Yeah?
Yeah, I think
fair,
so. I think we've standardised, we've tried to standardise our language somewhat.
I think what we can agree on is that we were not fans of the, certainly the way...
I am a fan of the word.
No. We were not a fan of the way...
The
way that the RFU brought in the new laws, or that they did it exclusively at the amateur level. We've talked about this many times on the podcast, and we dislike the individuals that maybe used a little bit of zealotry with some of their research and the evidence which they chose to put forward.
To sell books.
And we're quite happy that there is some counter evidence, which unfortunately has now come out after the decisions have all been made, which would appear to prove the point that the people that had an issue with it in the first place had.
Indeed. What happens next?
Shall we just, let's have a little bit more of this and then we'll get on with the pod.
Right, there we go.
You're right there, Phil.
I'm fine. I've got a great view of the fireworks from this side of the sofa.
That's all right. This is what I like about us, though, is we actually can disagree respectfully.
And disrespectfully on occasion.
And occasionally disrespectfully as well.
With the legalese, which has just been read out there, are you aware someone tried to get in contact with us this week?
Yeah, but I don't know if we should mention who, just in case it...
No, let's mention it.
No, just in case it prejudices the contact they may wish to make.
Well, it can't do. He put it on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, fair point.
He put it on Twitter.
It's out the Republic. I don't know yet what Will Carling, ex-England captain, British and Irish Lion...
You know what I was fully expecting, don't you?
That he had some issue with something you'd said?
I was fully expecting a lawsuit.
Yeah.
I was fully expecting a legal complaint. I don't know about what. I was racking my brain. So I mentioned Will Carling recently. We've not mentioned... There's no jokes we've made, is there? There's nothing distasteful. But yeah, I was expecting another solicitor's letter.
Well, we got 10 years of podcast. There might be something there.
Oh, no.
Well, interestingly, there's someone... We'll find out. We'll wait and see. It seemed like, certainly from the little DM interaction, it seems like it's okay.
Has he DM'd us?
Well, someone tagged me. I never go on Twitter, but someone messaged me on WhatsApp to say, Will Carling's trying to get in touch with you. Did you know?
Yeah, someone told me that as well. So I
went on and someone had tagged me and then I had a DM waiting. So I know Will Carling's phone number and it's very, very good and very appropriate
For
him as a rugby player. That's all I can say.
12, 12, 12, 12, 69.
he was an inside centre, but he wore 13.
Yeah, it was Guscott.
That was Jerry Guscott. I think that was because Jerry Guscott played for Bath, and Bath don't have never did have a number 13 shirt.
You're right, they didn't, did they?
No.
God, that was...
So I'm assuming... It's only now that I've actually put two and two together and realised that must be why Jerry Guscott never wore 13. Because he played for Bath.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
I just always thought it was a... Like, you know, South Africa had to do the six and seven the other way around. I thought maybe yeah. it was just what they did then. But no.
That's really interesting.
Probably to do with Bath.
So, I guess Will Corning can email us at... Where?
contact@chasers@gmail.com always.
Or you can email us, guessing what Will Corning wanted to email us about.
Yeah, but guess he's on a postcard. Is it a lawsuit? Interestingly, someone got in touch with me and said that they've listened to a recent podcast where I mentioned that I had that Scottish guy
yeah.
that went viral. But not because...
Oh, it's a great video, that.
Not because of the Scotland fan after the Ireland game at the World Cup back at about a month ago now, which went viral, went on Have I Got News For You, etc.
Yeah.
So and I sort of brushed it off and went, I didn't get any credit, one of those things. Someone got in touch and said, you've got a genuine cast iron claim for damages.
Wow.
Based on someone just taking your... intellectual property.
Christ, you could fuel the Learjet all the way to where? London?
Well, I probably won't end up going anywhere, but I just thought it was a really interesting email to get out of the blue. Like, so, don't just take it.
We were talking about AI before, right? And here's a malicious AI use which you could use. So we obviously have a podcast, been going for 10 years. Sometimes we're looser with the truth than we should be. just run an AI program to find anything damaging and then sue us for it. Or sue other people.
Yeah, don't do it to us.
No, don't do it to us.
Different podcast.
Other podcasts.
I might go and patent that now, so that only I can use that power.
Well,
but
so
you could go back through loads of podcasts.
It's frightening to think what they might be able to do now. Because about 5 years ago, my other half, Kate, she was involved with this company in San Francisco, and they had enough audio. They got enough audio of her that they could basically just type in anything, and make. She was the demo for this.
And
this was like 5 years ago, and they could just get her to say anything. So you can, yeah, you can get anybody to say anything now. So that will soon be the defense. That'll be the defense people have. No, it was AI. You know, when people go, Christ, someone hacked my account. I didn't tweet that. That'll be what it is. Oh, AI, I didn't say it.
Oh my word. God. I'm just thinking of all the malicious things that you can do with that. It's quite a lot, isn't it?
So I'm just reading about why there was no... Bath number 13 shirt.
Oh, yes, please.
Do you know why?
No.
Do you know the history? Clifford Walter Walwyn in 1919 was playing...
very, very timely, this feels like it's going to be.
He's playing his 37th appearance for Bath against Cross Keys. He was tackled by Cross Keys player George Greenslade, who was a miner.
Don't you love old school names?
Mm. Yeah, Clifford Walter Walwyn and George Greenslade... Walwyn, Clifford, took a blow to the kidneys, carried to the pavilion in a great deal of pain.
Oh, wow.
And he was examined by Dr. Lindsay of Number One the Circus in Bath.
Nice.
Taken to the Church Street Nursing Home, where another doctor performed an operation on him to try and save, well, him and his kidneys, but... Unfortunately, after a brief revival at 11 p.m. on the day of the game, he tragically died.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow.
So that was the reason, 1919, so all the way through to...
So interestingly, what date
80 years later.
What date did Bath stop caring about him?
Well,
it would have been a law brought in probably by like Heineken Cup or something.
Yeah,
like,
or Premier Rugby. Yeah, yeah.
It's a weird one when you do that. Like, I do respect traditions and whatnot. But teams do things rather frequently now, too frequently for my liking, like retire numbers.
Oh, in the NFL?
NFL, they do it, yeah. Thankfully, we haven't done it in rugby yet. But I do think, like, when does this end? Like, I maybe you should say no more than a season or something, but it just seems to be too frequent now, the retiring of numbers.
Leicester Tigers used to have letters as well.
Love that.
In that same era when Bath were...
They still do, by the way. Not on the back of the shirts, but they have it on the shorts.
They have it on the shorts, yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hence the ABC club and stuff. Oh, I thought that was about to be... well, it's a great story. I thought it was about to be, when you said 1919, something that might tie to Remembrance Sunday, which it was today.
Yeah. No, and it's...
I love being at a rugby club on a Remembrance,
do you know,
Sunday, Remembrance Sunday. It's great, isn't it?
It's so funny you say that, because I was watching the...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot...
we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Remembrance, Silence. Well, they had two, obviously. They had the one, the two games I watched.
Oh, right, yeah.
So Leicester Harlequins and then Northampton Saints Exeter. And rugby does do this remarkably well. It feels like it's in its DNA. And it's so jarring compared to all of the other awareness things that we're forced to watch. Like,
so right.
It just feels like this is the natural sort of thing they should be doing. You know, you're celebrating people that have done remarkable things, remarkably brave things. And it ties in so nicely with the sport.
Mm. You're so right. It just, yeah, you're absolutely right. And obviously, it was lovely to see it during the Northampton game, what with the Edgar Mobbs element that Northampton are very proud of. But all rugby teams...
Exeter Chiefs themselves have got a hell of a link with the Royal Marines.
Oh, yeah, no question.
You know, so it just feels... that is the sort of link and the way that rugby should be pushing itself, really, because those are the traditional kind of values that people really like.
Mm, definitely.
That's a great
show. It's the strongest part of rugby, or one of the strongest parts of rugby.
Yeah.
And we don't do enough to... we do enough to publicise it. Rugby itself does not do enough.
I think rugby's ashamed of itself and, you know, all of its traditions. But it's how it is.
I must mention, as you just mentioned Exeter again, that Joe Simmons is tearing it up in the top 14 with Poe.
Beat my beloved Bordeaux.
Yeah, they beat Bordeaux. He's top scorer in the top 14.
That's not bad.
And he's guiding his team to, I think they've won 5 matches out of the opening 7 rounds, something like that.
Bloody hell.
They're looking really good.
Which is big for Poe, particularly.
Well, it is funny how players who are good over in the UK turn out to be exceptional.
Yeah, 5 out of the opening 6.
Who did
5 out of 6, sorry.
Yeah. Don't know.
I'll have a look. They have beaten. Poe have beaten. They've just beaten Bordeaux. They beat to lose last week. They beat Perpignan, Lyon.
Lyon's a big scalp. Racing.
And Racing. And the one game they've lost this year was the opening game, 24-23.
Away at Cast.
Goodness.
So Joe Simmons Poe is, or Pow, sorry.
Pow. As we say.
Looking very, very good. And he's got that Emilien Gaëtan outside at 13.
Mm.
Yeah, very, very cool. But and just
Gaëtan, Gaëtan. Do you mean the ex-Toulouse fellow?
No,
guy. It's pronounced. It's written. Yeah, it's written. Gaëtan or Gaëtan.
He's an absolute star. He will be.
Oh, is this a young lad, by any chance?
Yeah, yeah,
I know what you mean.
He was the one who kind of skipped ahead from the under 20s straight into the national setup.
Yeah. The game I should have been at, were it not for a storm that took out some of the stand in La Rochelle. I didn't go to La Rochelle this weekend as a result. A group of us did not go, but La Rochelle got a win against my beloved Bayonne.
Have that.
With the last kick of the game, basically.
And it would have been, JB, your perfect game. It was
3-0.
Well, close to it, 3-0. It was 18-15. But not a try. 6 penalties to 5.
You don't need tries.
Not a try was scored.
You don't. Tries are lovely, but you don't need them. A really good game should not need them.
Yes.
And just on the subject of French and choosing a French club, we've had some absolutely outstanding emails. Chris Blackburn has pointed out that there are twin towns which might help you make up.
Oh, this is a great email. I love this.
He said. Thankfully, a number of French towns where clubs play are twinned with places that host premiership clubs, if that helps. It helps you decide. Bordeaux is twinned with Bristol.
That's not in their favour, is it?
Bristol is also twinned with Toulouse. So those are two of your contenders so far. How do you feel about the fact they're both twinned with Bristol?
Bristol getting Bordeaux and Toulouse.
Bordeaux and Toulouse.
You do feel, don't you, that some council officials are going on a jolly.
Oh, going on several jollies.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does feel like that. Clermont is linked with Salford. Now, I've been to both. I don't see it. I don't see it myself.
Oh, do you want to know a Salford fact?
Always.
So, a friend of mine works at Salford Royal. So, she was mentioning that she works in the Mayo building. And I thought, the Mayo building in Salford? Because, you know, the biggest hospital in the world is called the Mayo Clinic. Well, the most profitable, as it turns out. I think their revenues are like $20 billion. It's just enormous. Like, Mayo. Anyway, so, looked it up. The guy who founded the Mayo Clinic is from Salford. And he went over to America and then founded the Mayo Clinic, which has now got institutions all over the world.
Wow. Is he Irish as well?
Yeah, I was going to say, because I immediately think, obviously, of a delicious egg-based condiment.
Yes.
And County Mayo.
Yes, you do, actually. Yes, you do. Don't know his answer.
Yeah, I'd assume.
William something Mayo, his name was, I think.
I was in Salford last night.
Were you? Doing what?
I mean,
is this dinner you were at?
Yeah, it's barely in Salford at the Lowry Hotel. Over the well.
Nice.
The anaesthetics ball dinner.
It was the anaesthetics ball.
Oh, God,
anaesthesiologist's ball.
That was put you to sleep.
Hey.
Right, to move on.
So Poe is twinned with Swansea, Racing and Stade, obviously Paris, twinned with London, so that would be Quinns or Sarries.
But I mean, that is a boring twin,
isn't it?
It's predictable.
I quite like the Pro D2 ones, and there's a few, but I'll just mention Aix-en-Provence, which is a wonderful little town.
Yep.
A wonderful town. Very
close, Rosé as
very
well.
Very close to Marseille. A beautiful part of the world, and it's twinned with Bath.
That's up.
I mean, you must be a beautiful town to be twinned with Bath as a UNESCO World Heritage Site. So, yeah, fair play to Aix-en-Provence.
It's a lovely part of the world. Although, now, the fact it's near to Marseille as far as I'm concerned, is a benefit, not a negative.
Summertime Marseille, not wintertime Marseille.
Mike Kilkenny has just given a... he's given a very in-depth guide, but he's just talked about the cities there. But where was it? What's the name? It's the name. It's our Georgian friend.
Oh, yes.
Androsvili.
Yes. Androsvili.
I apologise. I think that's the surname. Anyway, he says, although my heart is currently with Lyon because of Niniashvili and Saganadze, Bordeaux must be on the top of your list for the following reasons. Amazing architecture. Paris was actually rebuilt. The Paris rebuild was modelled on Bordeaux.
Really?
Very nice.
It's like a miniature Paris.
And thank God Le Corbusier didn't get his way with the brutalist vision that he had for Paris.
He said the stadium, the location and atmosphere, the Stade Chaban Delmas is an old football ground with a beautiful architecture and a direct tram line from the airport. The tram takes 26 minutes and costs £1.80. From there, a tram to the city centre is only 13 minutes. You cannot beat that.
So yeah, that's good.
I think I've almost certainly made up my mind. I want Bordeaux.
So you're just going to copy me?
Are you saying you're having Bordeaux?
I said Bordeaux last week.
I thought you were waiting to make a final
No, decision. I think I'm in on Bordeaux.
And then my beautiful, beloved
Bordeaux.
So I like it. So in less than half an hour from the airport, you can be at the stadium, and in 13 more minutes, you can be in town.
That's what I want. I want that.
And he said, the fans are super committed. I'm sure you guys know why Southern France is a stronghold of rugby, but it all allegedly started with Bordeaux as the British and Irish wine merchants started moving there in the 19th century and brought the game to France. Bordeaux's predecessor team, Stade Bordelais, were founded in 1889. So a rich tradition of rugby,
right,
understanding and support. And then he finally says, food and drink is out of this world and very reasonably priced.
Brilliant. So I can't have Bordeaux. Thanks, Phil. Thanks for nothing.
So, Phil,
I think,
you should be more hipster.
Me more hipster. You're the rugby hipster.
I'm not a rugby hipster. I couldn't care less.
Let's get each other collectively, because I know we don't care about the surprise and stuff. Let's, for Christmas, like, buy each other a jersey. So I'll buy Phil a Bordeaux one. JB, you can buy me a Bayonne one.
Okay.
And then Phil, you can get JB whatever team he chooses.
La Rochelle.
I love La Rochelle. I love everything they stand for as a playing side. I just don't think I can get there.
It does feel like you need a... With your boating background, it does feel like a coastal team would be your...
With my boating background, the last thing I need is water. No, I need somewhere I can go out. So Bordeaux. It's just Lyon. Dubai that plays in the top 40.
Lyon might be the... Lyon's a happening city,
so
mate.
Lyon is cool, right? But also does not have a direct flight from Manchester until very recently.
Hmm.
So I need a direct flight. So the hunt continues.
All right. Well, let us know. contact@gmail.com. I've already picked Bayonne. Phil is in on Bordeaux. JB,
I'm all in.
JB has still to decide his top 14 team.
Do you know, it's just a shame that Stuart Lancaster is coaching Racing, because otherwise that could be my team, you know. But I can't support Stuart
Lancaster.
They've
still got what's the old French international that's there?
Yannick Nyanga.
They've still got Yannick Nyanga there.
See, Yannick Nyanga, he's a... Yeah, it is. Well, actually, let's talk about Stuart Lancaster for a quick second, because I think Stuart Lancaster is exactly the sort of coach that Premiership teams need. And the reason I'm saying that is because I want to talk quickly about Harlequins versus Tigers.
Yeah.
So I think what Harlequins have got up their sleeve at the moment is a really, really good plan, which is coach young lads really, really hard at the start of their careers and get as much out of them as they possibly can. And I think this could be, if not the future... No, I think this is the future. I think this is what you've got to do. You've got to get the youngest, cheapest lads up to speed as quickly as possible. I think Stuart Lancasters are going to be very, very important across the Premiership as a whole now.
Mm.
Because how else do you get the Oscar Beards and Yan... How do you say his name? Anyanwu?
Lennox
Anyanwu.
Anyanwu. Yes. Murley wasn't playing. Liner looked superb. Nick David's not old, but, you know, he's actually...
He's also not
one of theirs. And who was the other winger?
It was Liner and Green, Tyrone Green.
Yeah.
But he's... Saffer.
But, you know, if you look at their previous products too, they are a production line of great backs.
Mm.
Absolute great backs. I think that's what everyone's going to have to do now. They have to coach these young lads to an inch of their life and get as much utility out of them before their second deal.
Mm. Then that's interesting. And then it's the who do you keep and who do you let go?
Exactly.
Decision.
Or just let them all go. Just let them all go and then replace them with new guys.
You win nothing with kids, though. Although, I don't know, Tim Cocker, you always say you win everything with kids all the time.
And get the kids in. I always say get the kids in.
Yeah, it is interesting because although Harlequins have a very, very young team, it's still built off the back of some very old heads. Danny Kerber is always instrumental for them.
Marla, always still.
Instrumental for them.
Bringing back Launchbury.
Yeah, so they do have a spine or something.
They didn't really miss Kerr. Kerr was on the bench this week, but he didn't really need to come on because Porter was good.
Yeah, really good.
Porter was really good.
Really, really good. Some of the things they do with ball and hand are so good.
Yeah.
I mean, they are really, really good.
Well, actually, one of the best... The try that Tyrone Green scored in the corner just before half-time was the bounce pass off the back of the scrum, but it was the way that Anyanwu and Marcus Smith played off that little bit of disruption that the bounce pass causes. That was ace.
Yeah, both
teams did some good stuff. Like, Tigers are second bottom at the moment. Tigers are going to be just fine in this league. They'll be up there by the end of the season. They'll be up competing. They might have already lost too many games, but they'll be pushing for top four.
On the other hand, the top team in the tournament has only won four. So
everyone's lost one game, yeah.
So even, you know, Tigers, second from bottom, are still in the mix.
Yeah,
I don't
think
anyone's out of the mix for the playoffs.
Apart
from Newcastle, until maybe last quarter of the season.
Yeah, because there's only 18 games.
Yeah. You know, you've got to be particularly bad not to make it into the Champions Cup this year.
Newcastle and one other.
Newcastle and their mates.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, looking back at this game now, I think, I don't know for certain, but the teams that I think are legit going to be good, in fact, Bath, Northampton, Harlequins, so far I really like.
So it's interesting because Bath and Northampton, I've kind of got this feeling that I mean, this is not that groundbreaking, but they will be fair weather teams. They're going to be the kind of team that in between, well, now and early March or late March, they're not going to score. They're not going to get that many points.
Yeah, that's
good. Because Quinns, I think they've got a nuggety pack as well now.
Here's a question for you. What is the most losses a Premiership winner, as in a table topper, has had in a season? Because I bet we exceed it this year.
Well, no, because you've got fewer games. So as a proportion, a percentage, maybe.
I mean,
Saracens won from fourth in 2015.
No, not the eventual win of the tournament.
The league.
The team that tops the top.
The league winner.
I reckon they'll lose more games this year as a percentage. So the league itself is going to be very, very entertaining. It's just not going to be that high quality.
Yeah, let's pick a random year.
While you're doing that, I'll just say, because the game's going on at the moment, Toulon are putting Racing 92 to the sword. But notably, Henry Arundel has scored on debut.
Nice.
It's not, I've not seen the team actually. It's not Arundel and Wade on the wings, is it?
Oh, that's a good shout. Let's have a look. It is Arundel on one wing and Natubi on the other. But he's got Siobhan Fiku inside him.
So I always like to see. Do you see which other English star did quite a bit this weekend? Oh, he's not even that big a star when he was in England, but he's now playing in France.
Not even that big.
Oh, Zach Henry
guided his team. Yeah, it's got 20.
Zach Henry,
21 points in Stade Francais, going away to Lyon and getting a bonus
amazing.
Point.
Plucked from the
Pro de Deux
Championship or Pro de Deux, and then not good enough to stay at Leicester, and now he's absolutely bossing it.
I'm
in
not
Paris.
Sure he wasn't good enough. I just don't think he fitted into what they wanted to do.
Yeah, but Zach Henry and Joe Marchant in the same back line.
Mm.
Wow.
In a win against Lyon away from home.
Wow. Yeah. Is Joe Marchant's days with England over then?
For now, because it wasn't exceptional circumstances.
Arundel is not over. He can come back.
He can come back. Although, do you think that Owen Farrell's going to have Arundel back?
Owen Farrell's going to say no.
Well, it's an interesting. So, this Arundel thing. We talk about this. So he's got some incredible raw potential, but
Owen doesn't like him.
No, Owen doesn't like him, and he's absolutely fantastic. But it wasn't infuriating. One of the most tiresome things I heard through the whole World Cup was get Arundel in, pick Arundel.
He scored five tries against Chile. Get him in.
Five tries against Chile. Pick him against South Africa.
I'm not saying you should pick him, but having a difference maker like that. In the same way that South Africa have Colby, can be absolutely vital. Now, is he worth it? It depends how you want to play. It depends where you want to take your risk. I think he probably would be worth a gamble.
I think the World Cup actually showed it wasn't right in the world for him to be playing in the big games in this World Cup. And I say that for two reasons. One, the games that mattered, the England and the South Africa game, or the semi-final and the... Let me rephrase that. The semi-final and the final for South Africa against New Zealand and England, Colby and Aranci did virtually nothing.
No.
They were kick chasers
with
and
the
kick...
ball. In attack.
Yeah, sorry. You'd never saw their differential factor because they were kick chasers and kick receivers. They sort of...
And doing incredible try-saving tackles.
Aranci, yes. Definitely.
Colby, yeah, the Aranci one on...
Did do a few bits and pieces with ball in hand.
No, he did against France in the quarter final, but not in those last two games.
The other thing as well I'd add to that is like you do have to take risks with selection. I think England took that they played their joker if you want with Ben Earl. Like that was their risk. That was their risk.
With who, sorry?
With Ben Earl.
Yeah.
Because he's the guy that makes you play differently, and he's the guy that you have to compensate for. So whether you can compensate for another guy in Arundel, if he's not kick chasing, actually, do you know what? Scrap that. If he's not kick chasing, don't even take him. Like, you need well, to that, kick chase
that,
first.
Yeah. Well, that was Phil's point on, exactly. on Colby and Arundel. So yes, they're incredible attacking threats, as Arundel is. But however, the reason that they were effective for South Africa in a World Cup final is because of incredible defence and incredible work rate.
Yeah, I played Peter Steff to toy on the wing.
Give me Miles Benjamin on the phone.
Yeah, absolutely. You're a hard worker.
Yeah.
I'll find 100%. You one.
Best rucking winger in World Rugby.
Unbelievable.
Ever.
Unbelievable.
Long-time listeners of the podcast will get that. And if you don't get that, then go back and listen to the back catalogue. Understand yeah. that. It's also the reason why there is a Miles Benjamin shirt immediately above JB to the left.
There is. Mm. A match weight shirt
donated by the man himself.
No, it's not.
Is it not?
No, but I did get in touch with him to tell him that I've got it. And he's amazed. He's amazed that it even existed. Do you want to talk about Exeter Northampton?
Oh, kind of have, haven't we? Already.
Have we?
Yeah.
Touch on it. Talk a bit more.
What do we say about it? I've lost track of time.
Northampton were really good.
Yeah, we probably not go into much detail, but yeah, Northampton good. Exeter underwhelming. And Exeter... I'm trying to think how many times it happened in this game, but
their discipline was poor.
It was notable, yeah, discipline was poor, but it was also notable that after maybe 50 minutes or so, that they only had 5 points on the board.
Yeah.
Because I'm not sure how many kickable penalties they turned down, but they've had a habit in the last couple of years, or last year certainly, where they weren't as powerful and formidable as they were, say, 2-3 years ago, and they were still turning down 3 points, and they've not been able to get away with it.
Yeah, on that, it's an interesting one, because when they beat Saracens, this is what they did. And whether they'd have beaten Saracens by kicking their points or not, I don't know. But they beat Saracens in a league game. And what I loved about it was they kept on going to the corner and Saracens kept on repelling them, but it was the build-up of pressure until Saracens finally cracked, and that's how they won the game. Mm-hmm. Now, it'd be interesting to know what the counterfactual is if they kick their points. Same here. Is it better to kick your points? Well, presumably it is if you're getting repelled at every stage. But I think you've got to go into that game with a plan and then stick to it. There's no point in switching from the driving more to kicking your points on 60 minutes. Mm-hmm. You've just got to decide what it is. Talking of actual sticking to plans and whatnot, why do BT Sport...
TNT
Sport insist on interviewing... Is it Matt Ferguson, the Northampton
scrum coach?
They don't insist on it.
Someone insists on it.
Northampton.
Did you hear what he said today?
No,
I didn't notice
this
that.
This was simply remarkable, right? There should be an independent third party, like a bunker. And when someone says something, like this, there should be canned laughter that just piped through the screen. Nick Mellon's asked him... Well, will you be bringing on your front row? Are these the times when you think you might bring on the front row? And he goes, well, we had a plan at the start of the game, but we also adapt during the middle of the game. So we'll stick with that. Stick with which one? Which one do you mean?
And compare that to Rob Baxter, who got about 5 minutes of just... as the game was going on, and Rob Baxter was just talking in such amazing depth and detail.
Yeah. Like, you know, he's really, maybe it's not the detail, he's not giving you all the detail, but he's certainly given you how he feels about that game.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not quite unfiltered, but it feels like...
Yeah, he's just telling his mate, he's like, this is what I think, this is what I think is going on. And I don't like when any coach says, oh, you just need to work on the details. You need to tell me what the details are.
Yeah, it's not media trained, is it? Like you say, he will keep some things back, but he's like answering honestly and sincerely. Yeah. I'm going to tell you as much as I'm able to tell you.
So, do you know I had a real go at some of the commentators for Walk Up Final for not wearing a shirt and tie, because I think it's completely disrespectful to the institution. Mm-hmm. I think Matt Ferguson's answers is disrespectful to the listener. Like, you've been selected to talk to the wider rugby audience, and the only thing you can think of is, well, we have a plan to start the game and then we change it in the middle of the game, and then to give it a complete non sequitur, which is, so we'll stick with that. It's just disrespectful.
So I don't know what the actual truth is, but I wonder what was if what was going through his head is like, well, that's not really my call. It would almost be better if he'd said, to be honest, it's not my call. The bosses are up in the stand.
Just say that.
I do what they tell me. They tell me in this little earpiece, and then I'll get them going.
That's really interesting. That is actually interesting.
Yeah,
yeah. You know, there's no harm in telling the truth, right? But just give us this media. I mean, it's so out of fashion now as well. But I just think it's disrespectful to the listener. Like you've been selected to try and presumably tell someone something about the game that they don't know. You're a professional coach, and you come out with that. I just think you need to do better, much better.
He does normally get. I mean, I can understand why he's a bit defensive because
he coaches the Northampton scrub.
Yeah, and for the last like 2 or 3 years, every time they just picked the time where his scrum has lost 4 on the bounce. Yeah. They're like going backwards at a rate of not 3 penalties. And it's like, right, Matt, how's things going? Well, you know how it's going. You just watched what's happened.
To be fair to him, he has been a scrum coach in a team which does not prioritise scrummaging. not my words, right? The words of his director of rugby, which is like, hey, look, this is what we do. Right? We're very good at things we do.
But on that with Northampton, it seems like there's an intent to be more balanced this season, doesn't it?
I totally agree with that, yeah. There's a bit of a shift away, like they need to be a bit tougher up front. There again, the way they've got those backs playing together, I mean, I don't know where they're...
Yeah, but look at the back row. Look at the back row options. When they're all fit and available, you can't get into one back row. This is how good. You're going to have one of these on the bench. Juano Augustus, Courtney Laws, Tom Pearson, Lewis Ludlam.
Yeah.
That's good. And there's nothing wrong with Angus... Scott Gardner and
has Aaron Hinckley left? I think he has, hasn't he?
I like him. Anyway, but
the power station.
Yeah.
So they've got serious quality in the back row, and their locks aren't bad at all. They're decent.
Yeah, they're okay. I mean, everyone moves well. They're just not a good scrimmaging team. That's the problem.
They look like a serious team.
They bought Trevor Davidson in to solve that problem.
But they also let Aaron Painter go.
Who wasn't solving any problems when he was there.
He wasn't, but he's looking like he could solve a few problems for some teams.
He is an interesting one. I wonder if he should have left earlier to a team which actually... I'm not saying Northampton don't value his talents, far from it. But they weren't built around him. Like, in the same way Thomas Francis thrived at Exeter... Thomas Francis would not have thrived in Northampton. Don't play the right game for him. But Exeter, Aaron Painter, why not? Why do they move on from sooner?
To answer a question you asked before, a question that you kind of set up before, when you were saying that the winner of this year's Premiership will win a lower percentage of game than anyone before.
Yep.
So do you know what the... worst win record has been historically from a percentage perspective or a number?
Was it when
20%?
I'll go
win the league.
No, sorry,
lost 20% of the games.
Okay,
I will go. It was when Saracens won it from 4 and
20%.
Yeah. I'll say it's 64%,
just higher than that. So it's 68%, which has happened quite a lot, actually. It happened in 2020, and then you have to go a good chunk back to...
Who were the winners? Who was 2020 winners?
Was Exeter. Okay. And then go back to 2010, when Tigers won. So this is 15 out of 22 games, gives you 68%. It happened again in 2009. It happened in 2008. It happened in 2007.
Oh, wow.
So it happened quite a lot. It happened in 2005. I went back to the...
Imagine what it would be if there wasn't the 2 guaranteed wins against Newcastle. I'm being unkind.
So 68%, which, given we only have 18 games, let's just do the maths, equals 18 times 0.68. So you have to win... Well, it's 12.2, so you'd have to win 13 games to be better. If you win 12 games, you are worse. So 12 games is the target for JB to be right for the top of the league. There you go.
Perfect. Mm.
I just got to briefly tell you about a great win that happened this weekend.
Go on, please
as well,
do.
As well as Marlow, it was...
your boys from Marlow.
A scalp that was taken. Cross-border match. Raffy Quirk, Broughton Park under-16s. Did Macclesfield under-16s.
That is good.
Macclesfield. Like, Phil will know this from your
historically,
time.
Historically, yeah.
Macclesfield.
Cross-county borders.
What, Lancashire, Cheshire?
Yeah.
So we don't get to play Macclesfield in the Lancashire Cup, but they are, them and Wilmslow are the two best teams in Cheshire, and 17-7, it was a good win. But you were just talking about following through on a plan, and that was one of the proudest moments today as a coach. It was one of those occasions where they were so committed, the pitch looked a bit like the Somme, and they were defending their line heroically on Remembrance Sunday. And so I honestly wouldn't care what the result was. I was like, I'm properly proud of these lads. But it's when you see them sort of... You don't have to say anything from the sidelines, and they kind of make decisions for themselves. They're sort of like becoming
decentralized command.
Exactly, it was amazing. So we were 3 points up with about 10 minutes to go, and we were in their 22 and got a penalty, like in a very kickable position. 3 points up, and I was thinking, no, I think there was maybe 5 minutes left, and I was thinking, no, don't kick. Don't kick the three, because that puts us 6 points up and they can kick off and put us right on our own line. And the conditions as it was, boggy pitch, rain driving, it's really hard to get out of your own 22. So I was thinking, no, just either stick this in the corner or just tap and go and go. And they tap and go and got a couple of sustained penalties and just wound the clock down and then scored right at the end. And Macclesfield...
What was the score in the end?
17-7.
Awesome
great
work.
Awesome.
Yeah, so it was just like these 15-year-old lads
working it out.
It's their team and they're working it out. I love it. It's brilliant. Yeah.
That's not fair to say. How did Macclesfield take the loss? No, Macclesfield presumably thought they were going to win that one.
I think the look on some of the faces, but from the parents as much as anything, was like, what? This isn't the script.
That's the first feeling.
It's the first game they've lost.
We lost a game in school. About the same age, and we were a terrible rugby school, but we were good relatives to all the state schools around us, and we lost to Dufferin Conwy, and we couldn't believe what was happening. We just the game was a scare. It wasn't by much, but we couldn't get over the try line, and they defended like monsters. It was a brilliant game, and they were just better, but like that feeling of like when you get beaten, it's like the squash ladder, right? If you and your mates play squash together, when you first play squash, like, yeah, fine, and like the order's established. When that order starts changing, that's when things get really competitive. And that's the feeling you get. It's like, how did that happen? It's like, it was jarring. Hated it.
There was probably about 40 minutes out of the 80 was played in our own 22, and the defence was absolutely heroic. But I've just got another email here quickly. Ed Busy, who says... He was talking about derbies. I forgot to mention this one earlier. He said, forget Bathurst-Bristol. The local derby of the southwest is Camborne versus Redruth.
Ooh, ooh.
Town got promoted to National 2 West last season, meaning the first competitive local derby in 32 years.
Wow.
Two first-half tries by local lad and former Fiji Bath Chiefs and Osprey centre Josh Matavesi helped Camborne secure the win.
Nice.
They'd run out of pasties by half-time, but thankfully there was always a plentiful supply of cider at the wreck. So there you go. There's another local derby we've had already. Anyway, contact@gmail.com.
Yeah, and someone mentioned the Richmond London Welsh derby. London Scottish derby, yes.
Yes, this was Ben Fenton who said London Scottish and Richmond share a ground and the fans hate each other. Various things have happened in the past. 10 years ago, Scottish poached the Richmond coach, Brett Taylor. And in the off-season last year, in last season, Richmond were relegated, and that was something narrowly avoided by London Scottish. And guess which team Ben supports when he says, last season, London Scottish used 32 dual-registered players to just pit Richmond to avoid relegation.
Wow. Underhand tactics.
I know. Anyway.
So there was an email, it's a couple of weeks old now, from Ian Mayer. But I was flicking back through a few and saw this. It was titled Phil's Book Recommendations.
Oh, yeah.
Which was, love the book recommendations that Phil subtly slips into the chats, blah, blah. Pod is okay too. And he says he's going to take... He listened to the audiobook of Shoe Dog, which is the Phil Knight story, which is really...
Acquired podcast on this is very good too.
The Acquired podcast, all Acquired podcasts are very good, but the Acquired on Nike is superb, and Shoe Dog is superb as well. And he said he's going to start Thinking Fast and Slow, which we discussed, although...
I enjoy that.
I've not actually read Thinking Fast and Slow, and I've been told it's hard work.
It's very hard work.
But I have read what we've both read, The Undoing Project, about Daniel Kahneman and Amos Tversky, which is by Michael Lewis of Moneyball and other fame, who's doing a...
He's with Sam Bankman-Fried.
Yeah. He was actively writing a book with Sam Bankman-Fried as everything kicked off. When that book comes out, that will be...
You can make all Sam Bankman-Fried's money back.
Yeah.
To spend in the commissary in prison.
That will be dynamite.
Has he been sentenced now?
No, he's been found guilty of 9 charges, though.
So when does he get sentenced?
I don't know.
I hope he spends a long time in jail.
It could be multiples of a normal person's life.
But do you know where you should invest?
Tell me, please.
Tim?
If I were investing, and actually in the new year, I need to think about that for investments for the end of my company's financial year. I would go to Beardmore and Co. Independent Financial Advisors.
That's exactly right, Tim. That's exactly, definitely better than investing with Sam Bankman-Fried.
No question there.
But my current book recommendation is a book called Seven Games. Something like Seven Games, A Brief Human History or A Human History by Oliver Roeder, which is really, really good. And I almost mentioned it, actually, when you were talking about the AI games, which I kind of hate the idea of everyone living their little virtual game, even though I do occasionally partake in computer games myself and love that.
It's a step from that to...
It's a big step.
The metaverse and buying real estate in a massive digital world.
But Seven Games is a great... So it picks...
looking at chess,
Scrabble. Checkers, Scrabble is the chapter I just read, Bridge,
Poker,
Go, and one other, I think. But it's telling the story of the games themselves, but also looking at the current trajectory of those games and how AI and algorithms are either solving them or failing to solve them or beating them and failing to beat them. And I actually think maybe if... I don't think... was it Ed Warner that you mentioned before, Tim? I don't think that's got any legs at all.
No.
However, I do wonder if there is something that... Basically, a lot of the successful... So, like, successful chess and successful Go AI is helping the best players become better because it's offering them strategies that no human has ever come up with, and then the humans combined with the AI are implementing those strategies better. Same with poker, same with Scrabble.
AI could construct a salary cap strategy for acquiring, assembling a squad.
Well, maybe not, because I think there's too many intangibles, but I'll tell you where it could definitely help you. Lineouts.
Yeah, that's where I'm thinking of, like, play... So, create or like backline moves, create 1,000 backline moves, and then you pick and run the best, the premium ones of those. Pick 1,000, create me 1,000 lineouts, and think of the laws in a different way, perhaps. Run these in different ways.
I don't think the laws necessarily, maybe they'd work. I don't know. This comes back to my unique thinking, which I sort of postulated a while ago, which is you need 2 coaching teams. You need the first coaching team to examine and create a game plan based on last year's league. So you're coming into your pre-season, right? And therefore, you examine last season and you make up your logical coaching plan for how you're going to play this season. But bearing in mind everyone's doing that, you need a second coaching team who the first coaching team present their plan to, and then they create the plan that you'll actually
to beat it,
right? So I was talking to the coach of RGC a few years ago, and he said, yeah, this year we found out that the ruck is 2 seconds faster, so this year you're going to be focusing on the ruck. I said, well, I mean, you're a good coach, but I'm not sure you're a genius. And I'm sure everyone else has picked up on this. Like, you can't be the only one that's picked up on it. So you must all be doing the same things. This is where AI comes in. They construct the game plan that you're most likely to see, i.e. the first coaching team, and then you construct the game plan in order to beat that game plan. That's what I think.
Yeah. So that, but I think there's something in that, although...
Yeah, I do.
The problem with it, I've said this before, in rugby, is it there are just... There's too many variables. So, like, if you're looking at... If you're coding, which is what... Like, Moneyball, Michael Lewis, when they're coding baseball, there are only two moving parts any time. There's the pitcher throwing a ball and the batter swinging a ball. That's it. So you can code these things and the variables are minute. Whereas if you take... Just in today's game, Northampton-Exeter, there was probably, I don't know, 300 tackles, something like that. Between 200 and 300 tackles, some of which are one-on-one, some of which are four-on-one, some of which are two-on-two. They're just the... And everyone's coming from different... It's just... It's too messy to really utilise AI for that.
What you could use it for is... The one variable, which I think everyone is trying to crack, is space. You know, if you had a heat map of where all the players are at given times, like, how do you manipulate that space and where is the space?
But the space is there because of...
Breaking the line, getting over the game line.
As an instant reaction to the movement of every other player on the field in that moment. They're all related. I think where I... Coming at it from a different angle and... thinking about what would break AI if it tried to solve rugby is thinking about what Kansas City Chiefs do under Andy, what's the guy's name, the coach, Andy Reid. Thank you. Andy Reid has a session a week, and it's in that quarterback show on Netflix if you've not watched it, but Patrick Mahomes talks about this. But there's one session a week where they have a couple of hours where any player that's come up with a plan, They show it on the board to the team, and then they go and try it.
That's really cool.
So there's actually been plays that have been run in Super Bowl matches, which were complete bonkers thinking that came up from, like, okay, we've got a couple of hours to try things that might completely bomb.
Yeah,
might be terrible, but let's try and think about it in a different way. Do something that you wouldn't expect in a totally different way.
That's where I think, because if you've got however many, the 30 players in the squad thinking of those, or an AI which will theoretically just think infinitely.
Infinite
combinations, and then you get the players to say, well, these are all total nonsense, but these, something maybe, or you run as many of them as you can.
I can remember as a Colt, do you remember when the wall penalty?
Yeah.
The wall penalty. So we had a wall penalty, and scrum half would tap it, and I'd be the first person in the wall, and there'd be a line of us there. And the move was, I would stand and hold it as the pivot, and everyone would dummy that they'd taken the ball off me and were running in like a wedge shape, like a driving mall thing. And I just have to stand there with the ball on my tummy. And we practiced it. It was like, I'd have to stand there with the ball on my tummy for about 5 seconds, like long after the sort of fake mall had been set up. And then I'd just peel off and run.
And that 5 seconds would feel like...
It would feel like forever.
Yeah.
We scored a try from it. Not, I didn't actually score the try, but I got completely clear in open space because... The whole opposition just followed everyone else. But as Phil said, that like 5 seconds was like, felt. I thought, I'm going to get absolutely smashed.
He's got the ball!
Smashed.
He's got the ball!
Yeah. But you're right. So maybe, AI and a bit of lateral thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that.
Rugby is not a solvable problem.
No, it's not.
But it can potentially give you an advantage.
Yes. I always think, would it solve the problem? Have you seen the very famous example of unintended consequences of where they put armour on aircraft?
Yeah, yeah. Do you love that. The picture of all the bullet holes.
Yeah.
The planes are coming back to base with bullet holes, like tips of the wing and down the middle, but avoiding the fuselage. So they strengthen those points because the planes are coming back with bullet holes in those points. Missing the fact that they're the ones that are getting back. It's not because they're getting hit more there. It's because they're surviving.
AI solve that problem? Because if it could interpret that data, then I'm all for it. If it can't, then,
maybe that is a... that's like the true Turing test. Something like that lateral thinking.
Yeah. I love that story. Great news with Normandy wingtips. Thanks.
quick live Henry Arundel update. According to people on a shared WhatsApp group we're all in, he has done absolutely nothing except score tries. He's just touched the ball twice, scored two tries.
Faz was right then. Faz was right to hate him.
Yeah, how's his kick chasing? Terrible.
Yeah.
Non-existent.
But he scored another try.
two tries, wow.
Yeah, two tries on debut. Right, I've just thought of a little idea.
Okay.
We could, the bit which we removed from this podcast, which we actually, like, again, telling you how the sausage is made, we haven't actually deleted it yet, but we will have done by the time you're listening to this. We could just plonk that whole section and introduce it as a Patreon podcast.
No, because people can listen to 5 minutes free of that, and I just don't want it. Let's just get rid of it completely.
All right, fine.
We've had a course of action. Right,
I think that probably is the best thing.
Yeah, I think that's probably a wise
move. What are the games next week?
Oh, great question.
Isn't it?
I've got it if you want, Phil.
Let me get it. Well, yeah. Whoever's there first.
You're on it.
Ultimate Rugby. It informs me. London Irish.
It's Derby weekend. It's Derby weekend.
London Irish versus Worcester. Big game.
It's Derby weekend. This is a great bunch of fixtures. You've got Bath v Bristol Friday night.
So another West Country Derby.
Yeah. You've got, find out who's king in the north, Sale v Newcastle. Not really a derby, and it's going to be a beatdown as well, so that won't be fun.
Horrendous beatdown.
So I assume the Bath-Bristol is the televised game on Friday night.
I hope so.
It must be.
Of course it is.
Why must that be?
Newcastle?
Beatdown.
I mean,
no one's going to beat down Boulevard.
No,
lots of people will be going, and they'll have a great time at the Temple of Fun. But Beatdown Boulevard will not be
going
to TV cameras.
Friday, actually. I'm just trying to think if we've got anything on Friday.
I'm sure I've got something on, but I can't remember.
Watching Bath Bristol on the telly?
Maybe.
God, no. Actually, I've not been to the Temple of Fun for a long time. So I think I might make my reappearance, just like Triple H did when he returned to WrestleMania.
You have to check if there's any seats first.
I won't sit there.
Okay.
Straight in the country.
And then Saturday, Leicester, Northampton.
Yeah, spicy. Oof,
that's tasty. That's tasty.
And that is, so I can see Leicester winning that, despite them being at opposite ends of the table.
Yeah, I can as well.
Looking at the kickoff times, I'm hoping this is two televised games, because you've got Leicester, Northampton, 3:05, Harlequin, Saracens at 5:30.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
But will TNT Sports do two televised games in an afternoon? Have they not got some motocross or something else to
show?
I'm hoping so.
That 5:30 game is going to be game of the week.
Yeah. Well,
both of them.
Those two Saturday fixtures are excellent.
No, I mean, they are excellent, don't get me wrong.
But Quinn's Saracens
is going to be dynamite.
They hate each other.
They really hate each other. I think, actually, that might be the bit, like, Leicester-Northampton's a bit chummy, isn't it? It's like a bit, we hate each other, it's historic. There is real animosity.
Like recent edge.
Yeah. I don't actually think the two sets of players even like each other. I really do not believe. Certainly the coaches don't. If you look at Bath-Gloucester, yeah, again, a big derby. But I think they'll go for a drink with each other in Cheltenham. But Harlequin-Saracens, no.
Marcus Smith and Owen Farrell hate each other.
Oh, my God, the hatred is real. Hatred is real.
And then on Sunday, Exeter-Gloucester.
Not really a derby, is it?
That is an awesome round of fixtures.
Yeah, that is. It's a good round of fixtures, you're right.
Do you know, these weekends really get me down, because this weekend of rugby, I really enjoyed it. I've been so down on rugby for a long time, but watching this weekend of fixtures, I thought the rugby on display, the product was amazing. And looking at these fixtures, these should be amazing fixtures too.
I think you'll get some good games there.
Oh, they'll be amazing, but like, it just breaks my heart. Why can't
no one watching
the powers that be? How hard can it be to sell those amazing fixtures, that incredible spectacle, to people that want to watch it? How hard can it be? Oh, in fact, that's what I wanted to talk about. It's not that hard, because Gloucester did it. Did you see the Gloucester video?
Yes.
I mean, they'd got a video, and they got a friend of the pod, Sam Roberts, to narrate it. And it was just about Gloucester's history and what it is to be a Gloucester player and what it means to be a Gloucester player.
This might make a really good, like, 10-15 minute Patreon pod.
Yeah, and that's what we'll do. We'll talk about it there.
We talk about it there because I think you might have tapped on something, and I may have a slightly different opinion.
You do,
which I think might be interesting to explore. Just it seems, I don't know if it's Derby weekend generally, but I'm looking at Stade Français v Racing next weekend as well, and La Rochelle Bordeaux, which aren't that far away from each other. They're both west side, but it's worth. We can't end this podcast without mentioning your boys, Phil.
I know, very proud.
Pride.
What happened?
Ulster hammered. Maybe not quite hammered, but eventually came from behind to beat Munster.
Did Zebra beat Stormers?
Yeah, so top 14. It was a good week for... You had Benetton winning as well.
Did they? Stop there, just stop there.
Yeah, Benetton beat the Stormers and Zebra beat the Sharks.
Bloody hell.
Now, I do think the Sharks and the Stormers still haven't dried out from the World Cup celebrations.
Well, was it a real Stormers and Sharks team?
No.
Right, doesn't count. And this is the problem with like the URC. Until it irons this stuff out, I mean, the playoffs are phenomenal. The teams, the potential teams are absolutely world-class, but the product is still village.
Yeah, it's a mixed bag. Yeah. You can say that.
So the Dragons got pumped by Leinster.
But that doesn't sound like the Dragons that I know.
14-man Dragons for the last 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Got with pumped by Leinster.
Side. They did have some big names in there, but they also had... There's a lot of internationals not in that
building
team.
For the next World Cup, yeah?
Well, yeah. Of the starting Ireland team, Sheehan's there.
Dan Sheehan.
That's it. Yeah. So, yeah.
No talk about Leinster building for Europe this year, is there? Like just nothing.
What do you mean?
Well, at the start of last season, everyone was thinking, yeah, Leinster are going to be challenging for Europe. Ireland are going to be winning the Six Nations because of all the World Cup build-up. I think that was instrumental to Ireland win. And now, obviously, Ireland have got another 4 years to wait for a World Cup chance. It just seems very quiet on the European front. And
we've still got
Irish to win the...
Yeah, we've got another 4 weeks before
it'll
Europe.
It'll ramp up.
Do you reckon?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have thought so.
I think with Jacques Nienaber, Leinster probably thinking,
you've got this.
Maybe we've got the final piece to get us across the line.
I think they could be right, you know.
Mm.
Good Lord.
Although it could be a Ben Ryan type situation or Matt Proudfoot type situation.
What are these situations?
Ben Ryan, the greatest coach in the world,
yep.
Who just happened to have all of the best, most athletic, most skillful, biggest, strongest, fastest players, and Matt Proudfoot, the World Cup winning South African scrum coach, when he went to England and had Kyle Sinclair and Ellis Genge to play with.
Yeah, what do you think?
Not quite as successful.
He showed up and said, "Right, bend over and push," and that was more than sufficient for South Africa to win scrums.
Exactly.
In fact, you know, he didn't even show up to work some days. He still won scrums.
but let's finish the podcast on this. Henry Avergill's just got a hat trick.
There he is.
Still refuses to chase a kick, though.
Yeah, lazy.
From what I've heard. I really do. Like, I think he's such a talent that I think he will come good for England. It's just getting the right balance between the...
He must have just scored a hat-trick then, because I can't see it on... I'm just going off WhatsApp. Yeah, I haven't... and I replied... Our friends just put Arundel hat-trick. I replied, "What's his kick chase like, though?" And the reply I've got back to, "I don't know. It's Racing."
Yeah. Very good.
Right, let's leave it there. We haven't
right,
picked any
right, Patreon.com/eggchasers, where we will be talking about that Gloucester video. It's quite an interesting little talking point. You can support the podcast there. Come and listen to us there. And subscribe wherever you get your pod. And let the boys end.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.